all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Bob Gould.
And welcome once again, another edition of Veterans Radio, coming to you from the studios live, WAAM 1600, Talk Radio 1600, in, located in the Garden Spot of the Midwest, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Your host today, Bob Gould, with my partner. That's right, he's back. I'm back.
He's back.
I'm back for a
he's
day.
Back.
For now.
Yeah.
And thank you, Dale, for all that you did during my absence, and you filled in a lot of work, and you did great. You had a lot of
programs. It is a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun, too. This is what we love to do.
Right, and it does feel good. I mean, it's always tough to wait till 5 o'clock in the afternoon, but once you're here, folks, and, you know, that red light goes on the air. Boy, that's great stuff. Anyway.
It's pretty exciting.
Derek? Somehow my headphones are cutting in and out. I don't know what that is. Is that over here? No. Okay. Right? Okay. He shrugs his shoulders. Well, what else? My left channel is gone. Yeah, I'm working on it. But anyway, so it's great to sit back in the host chair, and I have with me, as my guest today, frequent guest and someone that's very popular with our listenership, and she got everything. That's Dr. Rebecca Grant.
Yay! You know, yeah, she certainly knows everything that's going on in Washington, and we're always very excited to have Dr. Grant on the program. But if you want to know what's happening with the Air Force, if you want to know anything about jets, planes, everything that has to do with that, and foreign policy, man, this woman is a one woman encyclopedia.
In fact, if you do have a question, we're not going to put you on the air, but you can call us, right?
Yes,
what's that number again? 838?
No, 734-822-1600. That's the one that'll get you into the studio the quickest.
822. Oh,
right.
Okay.
734-822-1600.
1600. So let Nina, and Nina, hello, how are you today? And Derek, I'm waving to everybody. So Nina will be glad to take your question. Give it to me, and I'll ask Rebecca Grant, because I'll tell you, Dale, I'm looking through this stuff. Can you figure out who's who? Truly, really know what is happening. I'm looking at this Hezbollah, Sunni, Shiite, North Korea, China. But let's get down to something.
Some good news.
Some really, really good news. Dale came to me a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about this. He asked me if I knew about the particular subject of the WASP, which are Women's Air Corps during World War II. And President Obama made it a hooray for him, too. You know, the guy really takes care of veterans. That's what's cool. Takes care of veterans, right?
That's all right. We can hope for. That's what we always keep saying.
Yeah, exactly.
All we want our politicians,
and all of them.
All we want to do, our politicians to do is to take care of their veterans and keep their promises. That's
take
all
care
we
of
want.
It. That's right. Exactly. Well, one of the Dale, you've been covering this story, and you had somebody on the program. So go ahead. Fill us in on that.
Right. Well, what had occurred was a couple of months ago, a former member of the Women's Air Force Service Pilots, and these were the women during World War II that would fly planes back and forth across the country, delivering them to the different depots.
That is so cool.
Isn't it? The different depots on the East Coast and West Coast, and then planes, of course, would disperse to Europe or to the Pacific. They also were instructor pilots. They also were not only instructors, but were trainers, and they would actually do the target towing, you know, when these guys
everybody's shooting
at the targets, and they did all that stuff. Well, at the end of World War II, they were unceremoniously dumped out of the military without any benefits or anything to go along with their service to the country. And it took a long, long time for them to finally become qualified for VA benefits and so on and so forth. Well, some politician, in their infinite wisdom, about a year ago, decided that WASPs did not belong being buried in Arlington Cemetery. And
I mean, that was policy, right?
That was policy. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't necessarily law, but it was policy. And what happened was, of course, there was an outrage and an uproar because one of the WASPs had passed away, and it was their only goal in life was to be buried in Arlington, her ashes. I mean, it wasn't even a full, you know,
yeah,
the whole thing.
Right, the whole.
So, you know, it's just a little hole. That's all that she wanted. And the story came to us from a reporter from the New York Post. And we followed up on it, and they followed up on it. And finally, just this last week, President Obama has signed a bill into law. Now, it's not policy, it's a law that will again allow the ashes of female World War II pilots, known as the WASPs, the women Air Force service pilots, to be buried in Arlington National Cemetery with full military honors. And I think that is great.
Oh, that is so cool. And, you know, what's really, never forget. No, folks, never forget. No, we take care of our kind.
No, we never forget. We always
forget.
Remember.
Always remember. Never forget. Absolutely.
And so we're going to make sure that if anything like that happens again, that we'll be all over somebody's case.
Yeah. That's called a windsock. Well, no. Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, that was great news.
It was great news, and it's just important to know that people are listening to us, as well as, of course, these other media outlets, and that if you mess around with a veteran, they're going to get you. We're going to get you. So there.
Well, that's throwing...
Speaking of that...
That's throwing down the gauntlet.
It is. We're not going to put up with this baloney anymore, and it's you know, with all of the organizations that are supporting veterans, especially during this era, and we're going to have a guest on in just a moment to talk more about that there are so many different people that are trying to help out veterans, and they're not just veterans organizations, which is what is so fantastic about the way the country is enveloping. It's hugging all these veterans that are coming back from Iraq, Afghanistan. I mean, these guys have been at war for 15 years. That's longer than any of our wars almost combined. And, you know, multiple ploys, deployments and so forth. And, of course, you know, post-traumatic stress, as we know, is a big issue. And, you know, I'm going to hold off on talking more about that
to talk to
our guests. But I think it's really important that we remind people of what is happening.
Okay. I am going to switch here. There we go. Yeah, we got it. We make perfect. Yeah, we make little adjustments here, folks.
Bob's hearing is so sensitive that he said I was making lots of noises there. Okay, can I bring on my guest?
But go ahead.
Okay,
let's do it.
So let's do it. So as we are talking, there are many issues going on out there with veterans suffering from post-traumatic stress, and there are many suicides. Unfortunately, we've talked about this on a regular basis. Averaging 22 a day, which is just, you know, the Veterans Refuge people here in Ann Arbor put up a display of the 660 crosses just to give people an idea of how many of these men and women are dying every month. But I want to bring on in just a second here, I want to bring on Soledad O'Brien. And I don't know if we're all familiar with Soledad's incredible work on CNN and documentaries and so forth that she's worked with. This woman is amazing. Not only is she a graduate of Harvard University, but she started off, working in television right away, and now she's formed her own organization, Starfish Media, which produces documentaries. And so the documentary that's coming up, it's a special documentary coming up on Tuesday night. So everybody, 7 o'clock, wherever you are in the country, I'm guessing, and I'm going to clarify this.
Is that Easter?
We'll find out. It's movie night, folks. You need to go to the movies at a local theater, and Soledad will tell you that. But anyway, I want to welcome Soledad O'Brien to Veterans Radio. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And you're exactly right. Tuesday evening, it's a Fathom event, which means the first half is the movie itself, which looks at two young men who are struggling with post-traumatic stress, going through a program trying to see if they are able to really wrestle down the problems that they're having. And then the second half is a conversation with some of the biggest advocacy groups, the IABA, Team Rubicon, the Dole Foundation that deals with caregivers, the Bush Institute, which focuses on veterans and people who are advocating for veterans, and then some civilians as well, as we try to figure out how do you close that civilian-military gap, as you guys know better than anybody. You know, there's so many people who do not even know anybody who served. And how do you make them understand some of these challenges? So we're very excited. It's Tuesday night. And it's a Fathom event. So anybody who wants to get tickets can go to Fathom, F-A-T-H-O-M, fathomevents.com.
Well, and as Bob asked the question, is this at 7 o'clock just across the country, whatever it happens to be, 7 o'clock?
Yeah, absolutely. Or? Yep. If you go online and you'll see what theaters around the country are showing the film all at the same time across the country. And so if you check out fathomevents.com, you can see which theater's showing it near you and grab some tickets, and then we'll all get to see it basically around the same time across the country. I'll be in, for anyone in New York City, I'll be in Union Square, which has a terrific theater, so I'll be there watching my film on the big screen, which is very exciting.
Well, I know that we're going to be watching around here because there are two theaters in the Ann Arbor area that are showing at the Quality 16 and the Ray Theater in Ypsilanti. And so this is 7 o'clock. Is this documentary, is this going to be available to the general public somewhere down the road?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that's been exciting for me about running a media company is that we decided that we would own all of our content and own the distribution of it. And so my goal, frankly, with everything we do is to get it in the hands of as many people as possible. And I think especially when you're talking about post-traumatic stress and you're talking about veterans, there are so many people who are grappling with this issue. Either it's something that's happening within their families or they themselves are dealing with the issue. And it's really a challenge. So for those who can't see it on Tuesday, we'll make sure that at some point, because I own the content, we'll be able to distribute it as well, you know, maybe on demand.
Well, I mean, obviously, you are well aware of the problem with post-traumatic stress and so forth. Can you tell us a little bit about the documentary itself? You mentioned that it's about two guys have come back from Iraq and are just, how many tours have they done combined, or is this just?
You know what's interesting? They had combined probably about six total, but I think the big challenge was, certainly for Garrett, was thinking that he was going to be sent home, and then all of a sudden he was. They extended his stay.
Oh, he got
and
that.
I think that
he got
very
the
disheartening
surge thing.
For him. So we focus on two young men, Garrett and DeLon. Garrett is just, I would describe him as just seething bad.
Mm-hmm.
And he would not have described himself as suicidal, but we find in the middle of the film that in fact he was contemplating suicide. Mm-hmm. DeLon, we meet him when he's just licking himself to death. And we really embedded with these two young men, literally slept on their couches in their house, that we could be with them 24/7 and sort of see what is it like to live with post-traumatic stress. So the film really sort of sits in their lives, and we see how things are before they head off to a program called Save a Warrior, which is in Malibu, California. And we follow them through the 5.5-day program, really looking at some of these things that are offered through the VA as well, equine therapy, ropes courses, psychotherapy, transcendental meditation, all of these things. Many, actually, organizations, and I know you know all of these organizations, that use some of these types of modalities. And so we wanted to see, well, what works, and how do these guys get through this 5.5-day program? We went in saying, listen, whatever happens, happens, and we will follow their stories to completion. Garrett starts the doc by saying, if this 5.5-day program doesn't work, he's going to kill himself. And his wife says, you know, he's very clear, he's going to kill himself because he can't take it anymore. Garrett is just much more angry and frustrated, and we follow both of them, and I think it's a really good way to both see the challenges and also see what are the kinds of things that are working. You know, it's interesting, you mentioned a moment ago, I think, for veterans feeling like often they just don't get their due, whether it's the WASP or whoever, and one of the things Garrett said when we started was, I think the media is terrible about veterans. I think you guys are terrible, so I challenge you to do a good job on this. Because I think you guys are awful. And it really, I think, made us think about, you know, how do we tell this story authentically and accurately and unflinchingly? How do you provide a service to people who are in turn serving the country?
Well, I want to thank you so very much, Soledad, for putting this documentary together and making it such a national event. I hope that there are many, many people that could go forward. My partner, Bob Gould, has a question for you.
Soledad, sure. This is Bob Gould, and welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much.
How do you receive your funding?
Who funded this?
One more time, how do we funded this documentary?
Yes.
We ended up self-funding it. We originally aired it on CNN, and so one of the things that I did, they were my first client when I started my media company, mm-hmm. and so we went to CNN with the first round of funding, and then we did additional funding, and this nationwide screening on Tuesday is funded by me.
Funded by you. Thank you.
Oh,
very
yeah.
much. Oh, we got to send some people your way.
Yes, absolutely. No,
see if we can
know.
Help out, because this sounds like something that the American people actually need to see almost as much as the veterans need to see.
Will it be on television?
You know, I certainly hope so. We own the contest, so our goal is to get it in theaters everywhere, and then after that we can figure out if we want to, you know, obviously nowadays you can do everything digitally, and so sometimes I think for people it's easier to even watch it. Digitally, so we might right. do that as well. It's been one of the exciting things I think about owning a company is that you get to decide. You know, the content belongs to us, and all the projects that we do, the content belongs to me.
Right.
And I think, especially when you're talking about veterans, so much of the story is not just telling a great story, it's about getting the information out. Because if you tell a great story and there's no access for people who really need the information, frankly, mm-hmm. I think you've failed.
This sounds like something that could be circulated around through the various veterans organizations as an activity for people to go to. I know we've been spending a lot of time talking to people that are suffering from post-traumatic stress. We've had people on. When I was reading the description of the documentary that you're using, Transcendental Meditation, this was brought up to us from a 93-year-old guy, World War II guy, who said that was the way he finally dealt with post-traumatic stress, was through transcendental meditation.
Yes.
And
absolutely. It was interesting. Delon loved it. And in our documentary, he thought it was the greatest thing. It really turned him around in this 5.5-day program, Save a Warrior. And Garrett, it never took. He just, what really worked for him was equine therapy. He just really connected to horses. In fact, Garrett kind of went into the entire thing thinking that the whole thing was just bull.
Right.
And he kept saying, you know, is this a trick horse? Did you train this horse to do this? And, you know, he's a very doubting person. And so it was pretty interesting to see him really connect to equine therapy, where for Delon, meditation. And there's tons of data on that. You know, there's tons of studies that talk about transcendental meditation making a huge difference when it comes to post-traumatic stress.
There are so many programs out there, and Soledad, I want to thank you so very much for helping put this all together, and it's just something that we're just going to continue to publicize and let people know about all the different types of therapies that are out there, all the types of different things that you can go through to help you. And so we wish you good luck on Tuesday night at 7
Thanks
o'clock.
So
I know
much.
We'll
I
be watching.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
And,
fantastic. Go to fathomevents.com to see where it's playing, and then, of course, after that, if you miss it in the theaters, we'll make sure that it gets out to everyone.
Well, we'll be in touch. We'll be in touch for that. So it's Fathom.
I appreciate that.
Fathom, go to fathomevents.com and click on there, and you'll be able to find the movie theater wherever you are in the country, folks. So make sure you do that.
The
Tuesday
film
night,
is called The War Comes Home, and if you just search for that, you'll find it.
Okie doke. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Time.
We'll see you again.
Wow. Boy, you know, it's really cool to see that. We're getting away from that medication stuff. We can only get the VA to move off dead center on that.
There are so many different therapies.
I mean,
we're going to have a
guys look like zombies, man.
I have a new friend who went through the whole VA thing and all the drugs and everything like that. And then he went off, and we're going to talk to him now in June sometime about a program that's offered in Chicago. It's a 2-week in-house program. And no drugs, no anything like that. It's all different types of psychotherapy and the horses and the dogs and anything else that helps you feel calm. And the whole thing about post-traumatic stress is that you've got to control everything that's going on in here and in your head and your heart, and to get them under control. And
not to mask them.
No, you can't mask them.
It doesn't do anything.
If you mask it, what happens when the drug wears off?
Yeah, that's right. No,
you know, everything comes back. And so, you know, yeah, we're going to be spending a lot of time and energy trying to talk to you, our audience, especially about some of the new techniques and some of the therapies that are going on out there. And so just
I don't even know so much of it is new as just awareness.
Well, it is awareness, and again,
TM has been around a while.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, this guy, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, though. But as I said, he's 93 years old, and he's going through transcendental meditation. He's now become a trainer. Is that cool or what?
Oh, way cool.
And he was at the Transcendental Meditation Institute out in Fairfield, Iowa. He moved there so he could learn the techniques and stuff, and he's been working with World War II veterans quite a bit. And we just had a gentleman on a couple of weeks ago that suffered from a thing called battle rattle. Well, that was euphemism for post-traumatic stress back in World War II. And he has been doing post-traumatic stress. He's 94. So this stuff just doesn't disappear. And that's what we need people to understand. Yes, you can hide it and you can mask it and you could change your behavior and do all kinds of weird things to pretend that you don't have it. But until you
that's
face
a good
it,
point. Pretend that you don't have it, right? Rather,
well, I don't have it.
Well, that's not me.
Yeah, and then you.
But a lot of folks don't understand PTS in general. It can happen from a divorce. It can happen from an
illness.
It's
not just. It's just not combat.
Folks, I had it when I had my illness. When it all was over. Oh man.
Yes, you definitely was exhibiting all the symptoms.
I didn't.
Pretty much.
I didn't want to get off the couch after that. I just wanted to lay down and sit down, and I really didn't have a whole lot of energy afterward.
No. This is what we've been trying to do for 13 years, is to get the word out, let people be aware of what programs and services are available to them, especially the veterans, and now especially to the families of the veterans. You have to get involved.
Bury it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
You're in it up to your eyeballs.
Oh, he doesn't want to talk about it. How do you know?
Yeah. Well, you got to figure it out. So anyway, I think you've got ready to go.
Oh, hey, we've got. All right. Well, let's very quickly go to Dr. Rebecca Grant. And Dr. Grant, are you on the air?
I'm on the air.
Oh, you are. And folks, let me give you a little. She pulled her car over to be on the program. Her daughter was competing today. How did she do?
Oh, my daughter and her teammate won the series.
Yay.
For the horse hunter paces. Very happy for them.
And does she have her own horse?
Yeah, she has a pony named Calvin, and her teammate rode another horse, and they won the cross-country series. Hooray!
Well, what's your daughter's name?
Samantha.
Samantha. Sam, here's a Veterans Radio salute to you and all your success in the future. How old is she?
She's 11.
11. Oh, what a great age. And they love horses when they're, when they have a horse, Dale, and they're 11. I mean, they're in love with their horses. My former wife used to ride a horse every day and bareback without saddle hung on to the mane. This girl was a country gal. But anyway, we don't recommend that. Dr. Grant, welcome to Veterans Radio. Whew. I just don't know where to start. We've only got a few minutes before. We're only going to take a very quick ID. But to get started on what is going, Dr. Rebecca Grant is was the director of the General Billy Mitchell Institute for Air Power Studies. And she is a senior fellow at the Lexington Institute. She earned her PhD degree in international relations from the London School of Economics and work for RAND and the United States Air Force. What does RAND stand for, Dr. Grant?
Research and Development.
I guess that sounds right, Dale. We should know that. In 1995, Dr. Grant founded IRIS. I mean, I got to say that right. I can't say that.
IRIS.
Yeah, I mean, you got to say it right. Independent Research, which does think tank kind of stuff for the Air Force. In 2012, Dr. Grant spoke out on the hypoxia issues of Lockheed Martin's F-22 Raptor. Tell us about that, Dr. Grant.
Hypoxia, lack of oxygen. Pilots were coming back dizzy from their high-altitude, high-performance flights.
And, well, before, though, they had suits, right? Wasn't that something that they had special suits to help them?
Yes, they still wear those special G suits.
Yeah, yeah.
To keep the blood pressure up. And strangely, it turned out it wasn't a problem with the F-22 itself. It was with the vest that the pilots wore as part of their gear.
Well, why did they think it was the F-22 only?
it was only happening when they flew the F-22, which flies very high, does incredible air combat maneuvers, things that pilots really had never experienced in other fighters. So it was just in parts of the F-22 community, but it turned out to be kind of a combination of the demanding flights and then this vest that was just choking them up a little too much instead of helping them maintain the blood pressure. It was just a little too much pressure causing the hypoxia. So now, problem fixed.
And that was to your research, correct? I mean, you were the forerunner on that. You were the leader, correct?
Oh, there was a lot of research done by the Air Force on that, and they consulted a lot of experts to figure out how to make that work. So I can't take any credit personally, but they kept at it and figured out the problem and problem fixed on the F-22. Good news. They use that plane a lot.
Okay, well, we're going to be coming back in just about a minute and a half, but we will be covering North Korea. I got a whole bunch of stuff here. We're going to be covering Russia, and you know, Dale, I'm telling you, I just can't keep up with all this. I'm so happy that we're doing this program. I'm just trying to make sense of all this.
Hmm? Well, it's always good, as we mentioned earlier on, to have an expert who can explain things
explain
to people like
it.
You and I.
You know, okay. All right, Nina. All right, she's giving us a 30-second. Dr. Grant, get yourself a glass of water. Oh, I can hear the orchestra. Right? Okay, we'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio right here on Talk 1600 WAAM. Okay, we're back on Veterans Radio right here. Talk 1600 WAAM with us as a frequent guest and somebody that we welcome, our listeners welcome all the time. In fact, they're probably recording this right now so they can go tell their friends, right, all this information. Dr. Rebecca Grant from the IRIS Research Institute. Dr. Grant, we're back again. I'm going to start right here. Folks, you need to understand what our role is. Now, I'm going to be very simplified. When we're doing all this in Afghan, Pakistan, Syria, Turkey, though, the Russians are handling the ground troops. The Syrian army is handling the ground. And we hear, well, why don't we send more ground troops in there? Well, that's already being taken care of, folks, and I don't think we're going to really like having that. But what we do is that we're targeting out the leaders of the terrorist group. So just recently, somebody was killed, and Taliban leader Mullah Mansour. Okay, tell us about that, Dr. Grant.
Yes, one less Taliban leader out there to worry about. Very interesting strike. So Mullah Mansour is someone that we've been watching for, 10 years or more. He was very active in and around Afghanistan in the years 2006, 2007, when NATO had, 100,000 troops in Afghanistan at that time, and he was one of the chief bad guys. What's happened now is that he was tracked by special forces to a location in Baluchistan in Pakistan. They found his car, watched the comings and goings with unmanned vehicles, and then used appears to be unmanned aircraft conducted the strike. And word is it was approved at the highest levels by the president. And this unmanned aircraft launched possibly a Hellfire missile or other weapon and took out the car that Mullah Mansour was in. And he has been confirmed dead at this point in Pakistan.
Oh, I love to hear that, folks. And you know what? That's a system, folks. That's called teamwork, because we have, a lot of folks that are chirping around, oh, we ought to do this, and they don't understand. You got to have intel. You got to be sure you know what's going on down there. We've got that. In fact, President Obama, I believe, sent 100 or so observers, if I'm not mistaken, to be on the ground. Dr. Grant, can you tell us about that, the recent surge? Was it 40, 50 of, I guess you'd call them fire direction guys?
Oh, yeah, interesting words. It's always observers or advisors. Advisors gives you, you think someone sitting at a desk, that's not the case here. These are special forces trained and out in the field, and what they're really doing is collecting that actionable intelligence, and then they have the connections, the communications to be able to talk with the operators of the unmanned drones and other aircraft in the area to be able to organize these strikes. It's actually a very formal process as they start to develop the intelligence about a target like Mullah Mansour. It can take months just to get it close enough. And then as they really watch for this car, for example, that he's in to move around, this can be hour after hour of continuous surveillance. They have to make sure that they can strike in an area where they won't cause unintended collateral damage. They're not going to hit a building or hit some civilians who are innocent bystanders. So they track this very carefully, and to do that, they need these advisors or these special forces, some on the ground, others watching it remotely, but they're really the specialists who do those kind of strikes. They do some incredible work very, very quietly and behind the scenes.
Did you hear that, folks? You got it? We have very competent people on the ground calling the shots. Get it? That's a heck of a lot better than having a whole lot of boots on the ground and risking American lives for absolutely nothing when we have a solution. And that solution is in place, folks. So that's what we're all about, because we're here to show the truth of what's really going on out there and with the Air Force. We're so fortunate to have you, Dr. Grant, on the program. And I do want to keep talking about the Raptor and the UAVs. And it ain't going away, folks. It isn't going away. These unmanned drones are going to be, well, is there always one in the air all the time, Dr. Grant?
Yes, and more than one. So it's a very powerful air-ground team. It's developed out of operations in Afghanistan and Iraq. Of course, we have advisors working in Syria. And we have to talk a little bit later. There was a very interesting pair of boots on the ground in Syria quite recently, a very high-ranking Army general of ours. But that air-ground team, you asked, are there lots of unmanned air vehicles? Yes. Central Command keeps a certain number of combat air patrols, which means that there's at least one unmanned vehicle conducting surveillance 24/7. And they will have upwards of 40 and 50 and more of those unmanned caps looking at various parts of the region, whether that's Afghanistan, parts of Iraq, parts of Syria, in this case looking into Pakistan for this particular strike. So that's the beginning of it, this unmanned surveillance. And it's crystal clear. It's really, really good. They can see a lot if they know where to look. And from there, they develop, watch the targets, watch for the collateral damage indicators, and go ahead and mount a strike. So very, very powerful air-ground team that relies a lot on technology, but, of course, it relies on those men and women who put all that mosaic together to make those strikes happen.
My partner Dale has a question.
Yes, hi, Dr. Grant.
Hey, Dale.
Hiya. I just wanted to know, are we being a little bit more aggressive in Pakistan? We're not letting the border stop us as often as we have in the past?
You know, we've seen these strikes take place in Pakistan now and again over the past many years. And, you know, the Pakistanis generally protest it, but, you know, I think there's a sense that there's some shared interest here. And certainly with a character like Mullah Mansour, there's not any question that he's been a bad guy for a long time. And so someone like that, it's, you know, I think Pakistanis don't like to come right out and say, oh, sure, go ahead, but they see that it's sort of in the general interest to go ahead and do that strike.
I would think so. I think it would be nice to get a little bit of peace in Pakistan itself.
I think they would like that very much. And, you know, he was a long-standing Taliban member. They've carried out violence in Pakistan, of course. So it was in Pakistan's long-term interest, too, for someone like that to be unable to cause any more trouble.
Well, I think we're going to segue right into Syria, because that's just got to – I'm thinking here out of the box. And folks, Syria, for a long time, our government tried to get – President Assad, the Syrian president, out of office. Get him out of there. It's a family that's been in charge of Syria for quite a while. And he was accused of being a terror. Well, anyway, so he wasn't necessarily a good guy. And there we were, working on the or supporting the rebels that were fighting President Assad. All of a sudden, all this stuff happens. The Sunnis, who believe it, that was Saddam Hussein, right? And the Shiites are finding the Sunnis. We're back in the Shiites. The Sunnis are back in the... Oh, tell us all about that, Dr. Grant.
Oh, it is so complicated, isn't it, Bob? Gale, I tell you. But the interesting note that caught my eye today is that there's been a... we're getting word now there was a secret visit made by the new Army four-star general, General Joseph Odell, who's the commander of U.S. Central Command. And he actually journeyed into Syria. They won't tell us quite how he got there, but I'm picturing he maybe went in a one of the helicopters or possibly in a light plane landing at the strip there. He went into Syria, took a couple of reporters with him. They were sworn to silence. And he went then and visited parts of the we have U.S. advisors there. And they are also assisting a group called the Syrian Democratic Forces, who are a group of Arab and Kurdish fighters. So our Army four-star commander went and visited this group. Very interesting, because we haven't had an Army four-star set foot on Syrian soil in a long time. Clearly not an official visit, we understand, right? He's going out to the western areas of Syria where the operations are taking place, because he said he wanted to check in with the Syrian Democratic Forces that our advisors are supporting, and I think also very much he wanted to see the situation for himself, probably look some of our special forces in the eye and say, all right, guys, you know, what can you tell me? What's going on with this enemy? What's going on here? So very interesting that he's done this. I think really good proactive leadership on his part to actually put his own boots on the ground in Syria.
Well, folks, we have been relying on the Russians to handle the ground forces, the ground fighting, and we are with drones and doing the air. So that's pretty much where the line was divided. So let's get back now, folks, to where we're at today. And so I'm looking at this and I'm listening, and I know that, well, isn't there a peace treaty or some kind of treaty that's being put together, a plan to have President Assad step down? And what would take his place? Do you know anything about that? Go ahead.
Yes, Bob and Dale, absolutely. All these things are in the works. There's been a truce, in quotation marks, a truce in place since February. It's getting a little frayed at the edges. The Russians have actually carried out some airstrikes over the last couple of days. What we're doing is continuing to use this great air-ground team. So we have our special forces on the ground. They are assisting and training some of the Syrian Democratic Forces in order to just kind of hold the balance there. And with the idea long-term that we're looking for a diplomatic solution down the road. You know, will Assad stay or go? Very, very tough. A lot of factors that play into that. But what we're doing at this point is keeping, you know, the pressure on to make sure that the Syrian Democratic Forces, those that represent the Arab and Kurdish interests, can kind of keep pressure and make sure that ISIS doesn't overtake the rest of this country. So there are a couple fights going on here, and you know, we're definitely in the thick of it with that specialized air ground team.
Has ISIS lost steam?
Yeah, I think they have, but it's interesting what our Army four-star there said. He said, you know, this is a very adaptive enemy. And so part of his reason for visiting the frontline forces was to hear from them how this enemy is changing tactics. So they have lost steam, but they remain the sort of force that you can beat them down and they come back again. So I think he's really wanting to ensure that we don't get surprised with a change in tactics, or we don't back off or get complacent so that ISIS can gain a little more headway or strengthen up again. We want to try to keep that pressure on and keep that surveillance so we have a chance to construct a more politically stable situation in Syria at some point.
Well, if we just, this is Dale again, if we just go across the border to Iraq, we are reading recently that the Iraqi army surprisingly, is pushing ISIS, you know, out of Iraq, or trying to move them out of the large cities. And I don't even know, where are they pushing them toward? Are they pushing them toward Syria to you know, surround them somehow?
Yeah, I think mostly north. And it's kind of an interesting thing that will take place city by city. So you take something like Ramadi or Mosul.
Mm-hmm.
When we hear, oh, a city has fallen, it's a relatively small number of ISIS forces that kind of come in and seize control, you know, and it can happen so quickly.
Right.
The process of pushing them out relies on two things, and one that's real important is for that local population to say, hey, I'm tired of this, you know, go to the other block, move down the road, get out of my cafe,
mm-hmm.
stop interrupting my business, and so you have to have that resilience. So to go in and resist is tough. It takes time to build up the resistance there, and then for the Iraqi army to actually kind of one by one push these folks out. They kind of melt away. Now the trouble is they do come back again sometimes, but they can kind of sneak in and take over very, very quickly in an unconventional way, and then it takes time for the more conventional forces to find them and put the pressure on and get them out.
Right, because I understand that the Iraqi government and the Iraqi army doesn't want to level these towns. I mean, they've got the idea of a government is to protect their population, and so it's got to be very difficult to go in and push these people out without blowing up everything.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And there's as you say, there's nothing to be gained by blowing everything up, because what you really want is those business owners, those families, the residents in that city to say, hey, we're tired of this, ISIS dudes, out. You know, you're not coming in here again. And so the Iraqi army has to, you know, find the ISIS strongholds, but it's not like you've got a clear front line. So at least as important is making sure that they don't alienate those people who really are going to be the ones who resist. And that's why we see these cities change hands a lot sometimes as things shift back and forth. Yeah, right. Tough job for them.
Well, we could spend a ton of time talking about this, because I understand that Iraq, what's the president's name? Oh, yeah. I'm thinking, I thought I read this the other day, that he is now seeking a truce with ISIS. Is that true? Taliban? He's now looking for a pact, a treaty. Do you know anything about that, Dr. Graham?
Well, and it reflects a little bit, you know, whatever the specifics are, it sort of reflects this issue overall that you brought up at the beginning, Bob. It's what is the Sunni-Shia balance? I mean, Saddam Hussein had it balanced one way, right? And then the Iraqi government, which has been Shia dominated, has it balanced another way. And so in the end, a lot of these people are all Iraqis. Yes, they're foreign elements, but you somehow want comity and a relationship among these different Iraqi religious elements. That's what's going to make a lasting peace there, which I hope we see in our lifetimes.
North Korea. Kim sets nuclear attack terms. I'm not laughing at him, folks, not at all. I think I want to cover this very quickly, because I mentioned this to someone a week ago, and they wanted me to ask you this again today, is that if we do take out Kim Jong-un, that what would happen to Korea at that point? You commented the last time you were on the program, do that again. What would happen if he were gone?
What would happen if he were gone? And that is the real interesting question. And you can be sure that our United States forces, Korea, and Pacific Command have given this a lot of thought, because we think what the first thing that would have to happen is there would be a massive humanitarian operation. So if he were to vanish tomorrow, you know, there are a lot of questions. How do we secure any long-range missiles or nuclear forces, that kind of thing? But then what goes on with those people in that country that have been cut off and deprived for so long? Mm-hmm. And a central piece of this is everyone believes that there would be a need to put UN or international ground forces in, along with a very steady supply of relief operations to try to get that country under control. We'd expect, of course, to see the South Koreans take a very prominent role in that, but there's no question that the U.S. would have to do quite a bit to make that, to stabilize North Korea, even if the dear leader were to vanish right away.
Well, folks, Kim Jong-un is acting like Winston Churchill right now. He said he is ready to improve ties with, quote-unquote, hostile nations. I imagine that includes us. And called for more talks with rival South Korea to reduce, quote again, misunderstanding and distrust. He also urged the U.S. to stay away from inter-Korean issues. That sounds like a threat. How about that?
Yeah, it's kind of both, isn't it? It's on the one hand, let's get closer. On the other hand, it's more of this rhetoric. And so, you know, so we really watch what they're doing with their technology. And, you know who I really like in the Pacific is our Admiral Harry Harris, who is the commander of U.S. Pacific Command. And he's a real straight shooter, very blunt. And he says, you know, North Korea is my biggest worry. It's my greatest day-to-day threat. And they are doing their missile tests. They are seeking to miniaturize their technology, their nuclear technology, to improve their missiles. So one of the issues that we face is how to help our staunch ally, South Korea, just hold the balance. And right now we see the Pentagon talking about adding some advanced THAAD missile defenses, perhaps on the Korean Peninsula. And of course, you know, we have substantial ground and air forces and navy close by as well. So we have to kind of hold that deterrent balance while we see which way North Korea is going to wiggle next.
Well, he's certainly not as bellicose as he was 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago when he first dropped or fired off the hydrogen bomb, and then I guess he has a missile delivery, but he hasn't. Well, who do you think has stepped in, Dr. Grant, to sort of hush him up a little bit, you know, try not to, well, what's your take on that?
Well, you know, there have been a few interesting developments, and, you know, who can say, but one interesting thing we've seen recently is some improved relationships between South Korea and Japan, where there's a lingering issues from World War II to do with the Japanese conquest and the brutality associated with that. They've patched up things in the past, quite recently, improved their relationships a little bit, and that puts a little more pressure on North Korea, tightens the ring a little bit. Our U.S. military forces have continued to keep pretty steady pressure there, not to squeeze in, but to say, hey, here are the boundaries, and don't go beyond that. And I'm reminded, too, that, you know, back a long time ago in 1994, there was a bit of a deal, an agreement that helped ratchet down tensions with North Korea. And then, you know, we always hope that behind the scenes, possibly China is exerting some influence on North Korea as well. That would be the very best thing, and that would happen very, very, very quietly. So it could well be their hand that is steadying things a little bit today.
And folks, you know, they have a lot to, well, they have a lot to lose if something were to happen in that area. And, well, it's good to see that they do have some influence on North Korea. Moving right. Oh, by the way, I did find my little notes, and very quickly, the peace deal is expected with armed militant Afghan groups. So, there is the president of Afghanistan, Kabul, for ending the 15-year war with the Taliban. Now, we lost a lot of soldiers, airmen. What's our take on that? Are we cool with that, with this whole thing? Are we involved in this treaty? What's going on?
That's so interesting. They've talked for a long time about opening talks with the Taliban. The current president, Ashraf Ghani, is, I think, just following in something that sort of inevitably had to happen. It's almost like how we talked about, you know, well, the Sunni and Shia in Iraq, how do they find their balance? But, yeah, I mean, I think this is something that we probably need to see. The Afghans need to find their own way to live in a slightly more peaceful society. We've obviously pulled back a lot of our military power there, but we retain the ability to keep an eye on things. And one of our goals has been to try to build up Afghanistan's own internal military forces so that they can take responsibility for their own security. If this is a part of that, well, you know, sure, I think there's some hurt feelings, and my goodness, the Taliban has done some bad, bad, bad things. But if going forward this helps to stabilize a bit more, then probably it's the right thing to do.
Well, that we shall. I know Dale's shaking his head.
We read the news, and I know Bob's all frustrated because all this stuff is just bombarding us. You know, I was reading in the paper, I guess it was this morning, there's talks about the influence of the Saudis in Kosovo. Of putting money in there to radicalize the Muslims that are living there and bring in a Wahhabism and type of Islam into that part of the world again. And so it's just this ongoing circle of
whack-a-mole.
Yeah, it is.
Whack-a-mole.
And how do you do that? I just wanted to know if you had any comments on that latest incident, or if that's something that you're familiar with.
Oh, well, like you, Dale, I always sort of cringe when I hear that money is going to support radical anything, even if it's, maybe not badly intentioned. But, yeah, I mean, Kosovo, shoot, where it took us a war. NATO had to have a war there to try to stabilize that situation. So, but I think what we're seeing overall is, as we look at every piece of this, it's so complex, and there's so many local politics to work through. But in the end, if we're going to keep this balance, we have to know what our top interests are. And there will be cases and places where we don't want to spend the next 30 years, 40 years, policing every last village in Afghanistan. There needs to be some kind of balance. It's got to, however, be within a firm understanding, sure, go ahead and talk between Afghanistan and Taliban and sort all that out, but, if we start seeing terrorist camps there again, the U.S. is coming back. We got to keep that in mind.
Well, speaking of coming back and changing his mind all the time, Putin, I think Vladimir has been checked in the boards too many times, man, playing hockey. I don't know, he might have caught one in the skull or what. Now he's mad at us. He's mad. First of all, he was our buddy. Now he's mad. I mean, I can't keep going on. No, and I'm not laughing, folks. I am not laughing. The smiles are for, whew, wow. So let's, what do we got, about 3 minutes, 2 minutes, before we can get? So let's talk a little bit about Putin warning that the missile program in Poland, I believe, the NATO missile system, is a threat. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. He's been up in arms about that for a long time. He must have pulled out his index card saying, what am I going to gripe about today? So this system is it's a very, very big radar. It's a big Navy radar. So there are actually sailors who will man this system. It's a big Navy radar that can look at missiles coming in from, say, Iran, actually. And that was really more the reason that Europe wanted to say, hey, let's, over on the back door here, let's put up a radar so we can see if something is launched out of the Middle East. We've been looking at the Russians for a long time, but Putin, he'll pick on anything and he does it to play to his own domestic audience, right? It goes over big in Russia, picking on the U.S. as being imperialist and doing that. I mean, they cheer and clap, and that, it plays well for him. So that helps him keep his domestic popularity at a time when their economy isn't doing so well. The price of oil is off, and things aren't quite as cushy in Russia as they were when he first took power. So it's always a lot for that domestic audience. But, yeah, here he's complaining. NATO wants to have this ground-based system that will improve their ability to track missile launches from the Middle East and, from parts of Russia if they're going to do that. But really, he's on pretty shaky ground making this kind of complaint. Not surprised, though. That's what he does best, stir it up.
Yes, he is, and he's playing hockey and enjoying himself, and that's great. So good luck to Vladimir. Dale, we've only got about a minute. You got something to wrap up real quick?
I just had one final question on the Egyptian airliner that went down. Have you heard any rumors about that?
No. Well, we've all heard rumors, right?
Right.
But we're all waiting for those black boxes to come up. But we'll have to see it's been very quiet. It's been very quiet. Like you, I think I say, wow, Paris to Cairo, how could that not be
exactly
something nefarious? So tragic. So tragic, and I think I surely wouldn't be surprised if there had been terrorists involved in there.
Well, the orchestra's waking up right now, and they're getting off their break, and they're picking up their instruments. Do you have anything else, Dale? Nope. Okay. So, Dr. Grant, thank you very much for coming on our program. We love having you. And, of course, you're going to get your complimentary gift card from Zingerman's of Ann Arbor, Michigan. I hope you enjoy that. Try their coffee cake if you haven't had that yet. Thank you very much, Dr. Grant. Right?
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Dale. Love Zingerman's, and I was delighted to be on your show. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Great day, and good luck to Samantha.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Oh, wow. That is really, wow. You feel more enlightened? Oh, we got
I'm
9, 8, 7. You're listening to Veterans Radio. Until next week, you're dismissed.